People of Note on Fine Music Radio is proudly brought to you each week at this time by Peter Turin Productions. This is Rodney Trudgeon welcoming you to this week's edition of People of Note here on Fine Music Radio. And I'm keen to introduce you to my guest this week. He is not only the winner of the 2018 African Writers Award for Children's Literature, but his very first novel, Amma, a story of the Atlantic slave trade, was winner of the 2002 Commonwealth Writers' Prize for the best first book. And Manu spends some time in South Africa and most of it in Ghana. And he is with me here in the studio. So, Manu, welcome. I'm glad we got you before, because apparently you're only here in December and January.
Yes, I live in Ghana. I have dual citizenship. I'm both a Ghanaian and a South African. Okay. Now.
Well, you haven't given up your South African citizenship, so I think that's important.
No, I managed to keep that by subterfuge during the apartheid years.
Yes, as one had to. Manu, before we start talking about Amma and your various books, why did you choose Ghana? I'm intrigued to know, because you went to 1959. You were born in Cape Town, weren't you?
Yes.
And then you went to Ghana in 1959. Why did you choose Ghana as a matter of interest?
I actually went there first in 1961. In 1959, I was studying in London, doing a postgraduate course. I looked for a job in Ghana. I couldn't find a job there. I was offered a job in Nigeria. So I took a job in Nigeria. By training, I'm a civil engineer. I actually attended the independence celebrations in Lagos, in Nigeria, in October 1960. And then there was a change of management, and the new managers had links in Ghana. They got a contract there surveying and designing roads. And I was the only engineer on their staff who was suitably qualified. And so they sent me across to Ghana. Now, to answer your question, why did I want to go to Ghana? And in two words, Kwame Nkrumah. Kwame Nkrumah was the first president of Ghana. At that time, it looked as though apartheid didn't have long to run. And I expected to come back and spend the rest of my life here. But Ghana seemed a good place to sit out the interim.
So your reasons, obviously, am I right, for leaving in the first place were, first of all, possibly to study, but secondly, and importantly, as a result of the system here, the apartheid system.
Yes, definitely so. I felt if I stayed here, then I was going to get involved and I'd end up behind bars. So I took the easy way out and left.
Is there a political activist lurking in you from your youth?
Definitely. I've been a socialist since my young days, and in my old age I remain one.
Oh, right. Well, there's some element of continuity there. So you must have been, shall we say, a very ambitious young man in 1959, and to head out to, where did you say you studied in England?
I studied first at UCT and then at Imperial College in London.
Okay. And this was engineering, structural engineering?
Yes.
So I'm intrigued to know then where the writing came from, because it's such a different career, and now you've written, what, five or six books, starting with this one that won the award. Where did that come from, the urge to write?
I started very young. I have a certificate from the Cape Times Squirrel Club recording that I had had three poems published in the Cape Times. So I was then 9 years old. That was 1945. And I'd done a bit of writing all through my life as an engineer. While I was in Nigeria, I did some journalism on South Africa. When I was approaching retirement, I thought, in my 60s, I felt, having lived both as an insider and an outsider in Ghana that I should have something to say. And I wasn't quite sure what it would be. And then there were civil disturbances in the north of Ghana, ethnic disturbances. One group of young men were going from village to village and looting and burning and raping and killing. And this seemed very unusual to me, and I asked my Ghanaian friends, what's going on there? What's at the root of this? And the explanation was unsatisfactory. In fact, it was somewhat racist. As for the northerners, the northern Ghanaians, they are like that. They have an inherent tendency to violence.
Good grief.
And that seemed
historically
to me, well, this is what southern people from the south would say.
Mm, mm.
But it seemed to me that that was unacceptable. And I went to the library and found some historical and anthropological works to read. And there I thought that I discovered the source of this violence 200 or more years back. And that set me off writing this particular novel.
Okay, now before we start talking about the novel and its theme and all that, talking about Ghana, I know you said when I invited you onto the program that you'd like to feature purely Ghanaian music, which you have done. So it's going to be interesting to hear, but you must tell us a little bit about what we're going to hear and why. So what is your first piece that you've chosen?
The first piece is entitled Yen Ara Asasini, and it is Ghana's unofficial second national anthem. It was written and composed by a man called Ephraim Amu in 1929, when Ghana was still a British colony, so there's no way it could have been a national anthem then. The language in which it is sung is Asante Chi. And the title, Yen Ara Asasi Ni, translated means, this is our own native land. And the text is interesting. It says, what a priceless heritage acquired with the blood of our ancestors. It is now our turn to continue what our ancestors started, boasting of educational achievements. Greed for material things and bad lifestyles are destroying our nation. Obedience and respect, caring for the welfare of one another, selflessness in the traditional way, these ensure the welfare of all. That is what will bring peace and prosperity to our nation. Whether or not this nation prospers clearly depends on the character of its citizens.
Okay, well, let's have a listen now. Pronounce the name for me once more, Yen Ara Asasini.
Yen Ara Asasini.
Yeah.
possibly the first time we've heard that here on Fine Music Radio. Music from Ghana, a piece called Yen Ara Asasi Ni by Ephraim Amu. The first choice of my guest on People of Note this week, the writer Manu Herbstein, whose book Amma, A Story of the Atlantic Slave Trade, was the winner of the 2002 Commonwealth Writers' Prize for the best first book. And Manu, I want to talk about this book now because it's from, although I've not read it, just reading about it, it seems to be in some ways quite controversial. How did you settle on writing about the slave trade and this person, Amma?
When I first went to Ghana in 1961, I lived in a town called Cape Coast. When I'd been there a week or 10 days, somebody, a Ghanaian acquaintance, asked me where I came from. I was a little shy at that time to say that I came from South Africa, but I told him. And he didn't blink. He just asked me, "Have you met your countrymen?" "My countrymen?" I asked him. And he pointed to one of the leading secondary schools up the hill, not far away, and he said, "Yes, go up there and you'll find some of your countrymen there." So I went there and I found that there were South Africans teaching at the school. One of them was a man called Manilal Moodley, very, very dark, of South Indian origin, darker than any Ghanaian, but with straight hair and a fine handlebar moustache. He had qualified as a lawyer in Britain, but he hadn't practiced, and he was teaching English at Addis Adel College. And at that time, Elmina Castle, which I'll tell you about, was being used as a police training college. And he had a drinking mate who was the commander of the castle. So through this, I was taken to see this castle. Now, Elmina Castle was the first building put up by Europeans in West Africa. Now, if you recall, Bartholomew Diaz rounded the Cape in 1486.
That's right, in the 1400s.
By that time, Elmina Castle had already been built by the Portuguese. Their first interest was in gold. But after some time, they had discovered Brazil and started to grow sugar there, and they started to take slaves from Ghana. So I knew about this background, but I didn't know the background history. It was buried in the back of my mind. And then many years later, when this trouble started in the north, it clicked. Here was the connection. There were these people from the north were being sent down to the south to Elmina Castle as slaves. And that what started me off.
Were they, those people sent down from the north to the south to the castle, were they then sent off to Brazil, or did they remain slaves in the south?
No, there were a few of them who would remain castle slaves, but most of them were shipped off, first of all by the Portuguese to Brazil, and then I think 150 years later the Dutch conquered the castle, took it from them. So the Dutch were then leading slave traders. And the British had another castle at Cape Coast, about 20 kilometers away. Mm. And that was the center of, the British were the leading slave traders in the 18th century. That was the center of their slave trade. Eventually they bought Elmina Castle from the Dutch, but they didn't send any slaves. By that time the slave trade had been closed down.
So it was all these elements coming together that got you to sit down and write this book.
Yes. Going in later years, going to Elmina Castle, it was now open to tourists. And the tour guides would tell a story of the Dutch governor standing hidden in the shade on a balcony above the female courtyard with cells for the female slaves all around it. And on a Sunday afternoon, the female slaves will be brought out into the courtyard for display. And according to the tour guides, he would select one for his Sunday afternoon pleasure. Understandably, there's no documentary evidence to support this story.
Right.
It's plausible. It might well have happened. But I used this to write the first chapter of the book, which appears in the middle of the book. And then I had to develop a backstory and a front story. So I spent 4 years reading primary documents.
My goodness. And it must have been fascinating research, actually, to have come up with all this stuff.
It was fascinating. It was humbling. And having created the character Amma, she started to speak to me.
Okay.
You know, her spirit was there. It was as if she was telling me what to write.
Now, before we talk, I want to use a quote from the book about her just in a moment. But, Manu, let's have another piece of music from Ghana. Your next piece, what is that going to be?
The next piece is called Ya Amponsa, which is the name of a beautiful girl. High life is the core of Ghanaian popular dance music. And Ya Amponsa is one of the oldest high life standards, with recordings dating back to the late 1920s. The song has remained popular in the repertoire of Ghanaian artists for close on 100 years. It's the first rhythmic pattern that high life musicians learn when they learn to play the guitar. The singer tells us that he has traveled far from his home country, and he has no female company. He meets the beautiful Ya Amponsa and asks her to divorce her husband to be with him. Now, the sound quality of the early recordings is rough, so I've chosen a strictly instrumental version by Kwamina Ray Ellis and his Agro Sounds. This dates back to 1975.
We're listening to genuine Ghanaian music on People of Note here on Fine Music Radio this week. And that was a piece, High Life as the Core of Ghanaian Popular Dance Music. We heard Ya Amponza, the choice of my guest, Manu Herbstein, who's an author, and whose very first book, Amma, A Story of the Atlantic Slave Trade, was the winner of the 2002 Commonwealth Writers' Prize for the best first book. Manu, that must really have not only surprised you, I venture to say, but also really sort of made you enormously proud and gave you a sort of impetus to carry on writing. To win a prize like that for the first book is quite something.
There was more to it than that.
Yeah, I'm sure there must have been.
At that time, the Commonwealth Writers' Prize awards were made in a succession of Commonwealth capital cities. And I received the award in Edinburgh, in Scotland. The previous year, the award dinner had been in Accra. But I received the award in Edinburgh, in Scotland, and the prize was handed over by Princess Anne, and the award dinner was held in Holyrood House.
Wow, in Scotland.
Palace,
yes. Wow.
in Edinburgh.
Very nice, gosh. Now, this book that we're talking about, Amma, A Story of the Atlantic Slave Trade, there's a lovely quote here that I want to read, but first of all, just a snippet here, because it says, in the course of 400 years, some 12 million Africans were forcibly transported across the Atlantic to serve European settlers and their descendants, and only the barest fragments of their stories have survived. And this is the quote, which I presume comes from Amma. I am a human being. I am a woman. I am a black woman. I am an African. Once I was free, then I was captured and became a slave. But inside me, I have never been a slave. Inside me, here and here, I am still a free woman. Am I right, Manu, in saying that that's a quote from Amma herself?
That's a quote from her. In reply to a question from Nigerian Yoruba priest in Brazil, asking her who she thinks she is.
Now, remember just now you said to me that while you were writing this book, Amma almost became real to you and that she was talking to you. And I know a couple of the little snippets of reviews I've seen, they say when you're reading the book, it's hard to believe that Amma is in fact not a real person. So you really have created someone special. How did you manage that?
You know, after writing the book and then rereading it for the first time, something struck me. Perhaps I was thinking back to the role of black women in South Africa in the liberation struggle and the way they had been oppressed not only as blacks but also as women, and somehow transferred this idea through into Amma. Because I'm writing about a fictional woman, but living in the late 18th century, this is conjecture. The historical background, I'll say, is accurate. But the leading character, Amma herself, that's my creation.
And by all accounts, an extraordinary creation at that. When you were, just to go back to South Africa briefly, when you were in Ghana all those years, you know, the dark 60s, 70s, 80s, did you keep up to date all the time with what was happening here in South Africa?
All the time. And I'll say this, from time, every couple of years, I would read an Afrikaans novel. My spoken Afrikaans is not so good. And then the other day at the University of Cape Town Summer School, I went to listen to Max Dupree. And afterwards, I told him that I reckoned I was the only subscriber of Freya Weekblad in Ghana, which I used to receive once a week and read from cover to cover. So, yes, I retained, and I had connections also with the ANC in exile.
Did your family stay in Cape Town?
My father was a lawyer. He was born in Graaf-Reinet, He did his first degree at Rhodes and then came to do his LLB in Cape Town. My mother was born in Caledon Street. She said in District 6, but I think it was just one block outside of District 6.
Is your family still here?
No. So my father eventually became a judge, and he was acting judge president of the Cape Division of the Supreme Court. And he should have, by rights, have been confirmed in that position. But the nationalist government appointed a man called A.B. Beyers, one of their own people, not only over my father's head, but over the heads of several others, because my father had a reputation as a liberal judge. So he was able to take early retirement, I think at the age of 65. And both he and my mother had been long-time Zionists, and they emigrated to Israel, where both of them died.
Oh, that's very interesting. That's an interesting connection, isn't it? A Zionist side as well.
Yes, I'm the black sheep in the family. I'm not only non-Zionist, I'm anti-Zionist.
Okay. So, to get back to the book now, when this book was written and published and you had won this prize, did you automatically think, right now, I'm going to embark on a career as a writer? For example, how long did it take you to release your second book?
It took some time. What happened was this. The book was being used by an academic in the United States.
Amma, the slave
lecturer. Yes. Not as literature. He was teaching a history, the history of colonialism and imperialism, and I think history of the slave trade as well. And he kept a record of the response of his students. And one of the American students said, you know, this history is something that we were never taught at school. We didn't know anything about it. And I wonder whether there wouldn't be a place for a shortened, abridged version suitable for school kids. So I responded to that. I set out to write that, but in fact, what I wrote was a sequel. And in the sequel, which is called Brave Music of a Distant Drum, I gave Amma her voice. So whereas the first novel is written in the third person, the sequel is written in the first person, both by Amma and by her Brazil-born only son.
Okay. Let's explore that in a while, because I'd like to take your third piece of music, Manu. We're listening to Ghanaian music on People of Note this week. Agyaku Nimo. How's my pronunciation going?
It's not very good. Eja is actually... Eja is the word for father, so it's a title of respect, and this is the professional name of a musician called Daniel Amponsa. So he's called Eja Konimo, and he's an exponent of what is known as palm wine music. He grew up in a musical family. His father was a guitarist and a trumpet player in a local brass band. He was introduced to European classical guitar at the age of 15 and eventually developed a repertoire that marries classical guitar playing techniques to the rhythms and melodies of the Asante. He writes his own lyrics, and as long ago as 1968, he recorded his first album, which was called Asante Ballads, with the poetic lyrics in the Asante Tree language, later published with a parallel translation in English and also in Esperanto. And by the early 1970s, he'd committed himself to palm wine guitar high life, performing and recording his original repertoire with a 7-piece acoustic ensemble. Well into his 80s, he is still performing. And I last heard him play in Accra last October.
So what are we going to hear? Old man plants a coconut tree.
This is, yes, but it's that's the translation of the title, Old Man Plants a Coconut Tree. And I think in it, a younger man is asking him, you know, you're old. Why are you planting trees at your age? And he explains.
I'm dying. When I'm
There you are, a piece of Ghanaian music called Old Man Plants a Coconut Tree. I'm not going to try that pronunciation again because you said my pronunciation was terrible, Manu. Manu Herbstein is my guest, the author of an award-winning book, as I've mentioned, the winner of the 2002 Commonwealth Writers Prize for the best first book, Amma, A Story of the Atlantic Slave Trade. But Manu is also the winner of the 2018 African Writers Award for Children's Literature. And I just want to turn there briefly, Manu. Tell me about your interest in children's literature and what did you do to win that award?
Well, what I did to win that award was really less than writing a book. An organization, Pan-African organization with... which is run, I think its headquarters is in Abuja in Nigeria, asked for contributions concerned with the life of a girl child. And I happened to have this story in a drawer, and I looked at it, and it seemed to fit perfectly. So I submitted it. The judge of these stories is quite a remarkable woman. She's a Tanzanian Muslim, and she was Tanzania's first female pilot, and she's also has won a number of awards for her own writing for children. So she selected my story.
Good for you.
Which was very gratifying.
Absolutely.
It's just a short story. It's intended to be published with illustrations, so it only takes 10 minutes to read it.
Okay. I'll have a bash later. Manu, just before the music, you mentioned your second novel, Brave Music of a Distant Drum, where Amma from the first book becomes more of the narrator. But then there are another four books that you've written apart from the children's book. Are they completely different? Are they related? Ramsay's Ghost, for example?
Well, Ramsay's Ghost is a dystopian, utopian, political thriller set in Ghana in 2060.
2060. Okay. Hence dystopian.
Set in the future.
Right.
The boy who spat in Sagrenti's eye is aimed at a young adult readership, but it tells the story of the British invasion of Asante, the Asante capital, Kumasi, in 1873-1874. There were maybe a dozen books written about the war, all by Brits. Some of the soldiers wrote books, and there were war correspondents there. One of the war correspondents was an illustrator. He was a war artist. And he sent his drawings back to London, and they were turned into engravings, and they were published in the Illustrated London News. And I've used those to illustrate those illustrations.
Oh,
to illustrate,
I see. Manu
to illustrate the story.
Oh, I see what you mean.
Akosa and Osman is a story about a young Ghanaian boy and girl, teenagers, one from a poor family, one from a middle-class family, and how their lives intersect. And the last one the short book, is called President Michel, or 10 Days That Shook the World. And it's set in the run-up to the 2012 American presidential election, and Barack Obama sadly has a heart attack and drops dead.
Oh my goodness.
And the Democrats have to recall their convention, and Jesse Jackson makes a passionate speech recommending Michelle Obama as their candidate, and she comes in with a huge majority because of the, not because of politics, she says she won't campaign, but because of the sentimentality of the situation. And then the Americans get something different from what they expected.
Oh, right. Gosh, what an array of books. Manu, let's ponder that while we listen to your next piece of music. Now, what have we got this time?
Well, this piece connects Ghana with South Africa. The Ghanaian saxophonist, professionally known as George Lee, his full name was George Lee Lanyor. He set up a recording studio in Swaziland in the late 1980s. Unfortunately, he was cheated and the venture collapsed. And he and his English wife moved to Johannesburg in 1990. And I think it might have been the drummer Lulu Gonsana playing drums at the Green Dolphin at the waterfront who sent me to see him when I mentioned that to him that I lived in Ghana. And from then on, I used to deliver a bag of palm nuts to him when I stopped over in Johannesburg. And though his English wife, Andrea, had never lived in Ghana, she had mastered Ghanaian cuisine and could make a great palm nut soup. So this is a sample of George's work as a saxophonist.
Well, a short sample there, as Manu said, of the Ghanaian saxophonist George Lee. And Manu, we only have a few moments left in the program now, but of these books, six books you've written, starting with this rather extraordinary one, Ama, The Story of Atlantic Slave Trade, is this now your life? Are you now officially an author? Because each of your subjects seems to have really quite a fascinating angle to them. Can we expect more novels from you?
No, not more novels, I think, but I have plans to work on a memoir.
Okay. So that will cover all the aspects of your life that you've been talking of,
yes.
And your life in Ghana.
Yes, certainly.
And presumably you're going to stay in Ghana. You said, as we said right at the beginning, you come here, what, for 3 months of the year?
Yes, my wife is in Ghana,
mm-hmm.
Running a struggling business.
Okay. But you're happy there, and it sounds as though you've had a fascinating time there.
My life is there, yes.
Your life is there. And the poetry side, just briefly, you mentioned how when you were very young you were writing poetry. Do you ever write poetry now?
I have written some poetry, but not for publication.
Okay.
It's not private. Very good.
In your bottom drawer, like the children's
yes.
story was. And then just before I go, can we get hold of your books here in South Africa? Are they available?
They're available from the online book dealers like Loot or Exclusive Books also shows them online.
Okay.
They're not in the bookstores, but they can be ordered. Perhaps in Cape Town, Clark's Books may have some copies.
Okay. And do you have a website that people can visit if they want to find out more about you?
Yes. It's www.manuherbstein.com.
And Manu is spelled M-A-N-U,
yeah.
ManuHerbstein.com. And apparently it's filled with all sorts of fascinating information about your various books and so on.
Yeah.
Okay, well, it's been really quite interesting talking to you about these books and about your character, Ama, who almost became human. But you're going to leave us now with a definite South African connection with Hugh Masekela.
Yes, well, my wife and I returned to live in Accra in 1970, and we've lived there since. In the early 1970s, Hugh Masekela lived in Accra for some time. And we would go to Faisal Helwani's Napoleon nightclub to listen to him playing with the Ghanaian group Hetsole Sounds, which he later took with him to the United States. And here's a sample with Hugh joining in about halfway through.
Manu, thank you for coming to the studio during your holiday here in Cape Town, and thanks for sharing a number of thoughts with us, and also for this Ghanaian music. It's been fascinating. Thank you very much, as we go out now with Hugh Masekela.
Languta, languta, zote, 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 languta, languta, zote
People of Note on Fine Music Radio was proudly brought to you by Peter Turin Productions.
This March, Peter Turin invites you to enjoy a night of fun and laughter at Theatre on the Bay with For Love, a unique evening of comedy variety which promises to be a not-to-be-missed theatrical experience, starring acclaimed West End actors Delina Kidd, Nicholas Waring, Claire Carey and Donald Douglas. Don't miss these four actors presenting six scenes from the most popular playwrights of the 20th century, including Noel Coward, Harold Pinter, Alan Bennett, Michael Frayn, and much, much more. An unforgettable night at the theatre. Don't miss For Love, from 6th to the 16th of March, only at Theatre on the Bay.